Our For Whom the Bell Tolls election coverage continues this evening as we tackle the issue of accountability and transparency with a person who took on the cloud of secrecy surrounding government's bailout of the Kiku conglomerate. In the Cruise Control hot seat this evening at 6:30, Afra Raymond. What has him so concerned about the bailout? The outspoken columnist Afra Raymond is in the hot seat at 6:30 p.m. on the Cruise Control, only on Isaac 98.1 FM. All righty, so the gentleman in studio with us today is Mr. Afra Raymond. Now, he has a very distinguished and large portfolio. No, he's shaking his head and he's saying no.
It almost made me blush there.
Really? Okay, I'll try it.
Good evening, listeners.
It's a privilege and an honor to have you. I'm very excited to hear exactly what you have to say about some of the issues affecting our country right now. We were speaking before off air and you were telling me that you think the biggest issue right now is the Kiku financial crisis.
Bailout, absolutely.
Okay, so that's what we're going to focus on today.
I'd like to
Before I jump in, let's give them a brief summary. So I know you specialize in project management, house development, planning and development. You're a columnist as well. You wear many hats. You wear many hats, Mr. Raymond, which must make for a very eventful life.
Yes.
I know you also have a very entertaining and informative blog, which I do enjoy. I browsed it today and I was like, yes, this is the Thinking Man's blog, which you can find on afroraymond.com.
It's afroraymond.wordpress.com.
.wordpress.com. Thank you very much. Yes.
I know you're checking, doing that to see if I was paying attention, but it's good.
Okay.
We're working on tag teaming each other. That's good.
Okay, so we have Tessa T. Samson with us today, and we are going to dog you with some questions today.
Sure.
All right, so I know you're very much interested in white-collar crime and good governance, national development, and financial matters.
Yes.
So let's, before we get into the questions, tell us a bit about yourself so the listeners can get an understanding of who you are as a person.
Well, that's a big one. But really, I'm a concerned citizen. Okay? I've had the benefit of a good family upbringing. And I've also had the benefit, dare I say it, tongue-in-cheek, of not going to prestige school.
Okay,
so I went to normal schools. I had excellent teachers. I went to ModSec. I went to Romney's Preparatory School in Woodbrook. I went to ModSec, which is the name people in South have for San Fernando Sec.
Okay.
I went to DigoSec and I went to Polytechnic. So all of those places, I never went to those places where those people went to.
Okay. Those people.
Yeah, I just...
You're just saying those people.
I'm just being a little provocative there. And I'm just making the point that I had a good education.
Right.
My teachers, who were the teachers within the government secondary system, were first-class teachers. They made every effort with us. They were very inspiring. They really got you to think about things differently.
Mm.
And, of course, I carry a lot of those sensibilities with me now, you know? It's quite a list of teachers, but you probably don't have time this evening to go into some of those people are, you know?
No, I understand. Okay, so we want to discuss Kiku right now.
Sure.
And there's a question I want to ask.
Yes.
And I think it's interesting, but I don't know if to save it for later or to give it to you now. What exactly do you think is the biggest thing that we have overlooked within the Kiku crisis right now?
Well, the biggest single thing we've overlooked is the fact that the bailout shouldn't have taken place.
Okay.
Mm.
Let's just get right to the point.
Mm-hmm.
There is no good reason. I'll say it again, there is no good reason that our public funds should have been expended to rescue Mr. Lawrence Dupree and his cohorts from their financial adventures or misadventures or whatever you want to call it. No good reason.
Okay. All right.
We were told in January 2009 that the country needs to do this to protect against what the economists call a systemic risk, the risk of an economic meltdown and so on and so on. We were told at that time that it would cost about $5 billion. And of course, in March of 2010, the People's Partnership took power. In May of 2010. And the Prime Minister, the current Prime Minister, spoke at the Parliament on the 1st of October 2010. And she told us that the bailout had cost about $7.3 billion thus far. Now, what that is telling us is that having told us in January of 2009 that the figure was five, the incoming government checks the figures and realizes that we actually spent, our treasury has spent $7.3 billion. And the point that Prime Minister Prasad Biswasa made in his speech on the 1st of October is, how could it be, okay, estimate could have been off, how could it be that you had to spend $5 billion. We checked the figures. We're a new government. The figures are 7.3. You had to spend more. Right. So the first estimate was wrong.
Okay.
You had to spend all this money because not spending it would have put the economy at risk, pensioners, old people, la, la, la. And yet, Mr. Dukuran is trying to change the arrangement. And all these groups are forming, the policyholders group at Permel, another group at Ramesh. So who are all these people?
Mm.
If you did all of this
mm-hmm.
for old people and poor people and the credit union and the small man,
mm-hmm.
who got the $7.3 billion?
Mm. That's a good question.
The Prime Minister went further to say that it would cost another $7 billion or so to pay off everybody. So we're looking at a total of about $14.3 billion as declared by the current Prime Minister on the 1st of October 2010. But I want to remind listeners that the current estimate of what all of this has cost, if you listen to top officials, central bank people, and the Minister of Finance, and those sorts of people, is between $25 and $26 billion. So where did those $11 billion go? And that is what I'm fighting for. That is the information I'm fighting for.
Mm.
Because the first supposition, and that's all it is, the first supposition that not putting a bailout in place would have caused a collapse hasn't been proven. The people who were saying it have gone silent. They know who they are, and I'll call their names later in the program. They have gone silent. And in fact, the first estimate was wrong. The recalculation in 2010, that was wrong too. Or is it something else that we're seeing? Because if it is that we have public officials in this country, irrespective of the party in power, if it is that we have public officials in this country that you cannot trust them at $5 million,
mm-hmm.
or $1 million self. How could we be trusting this bailout process with $25,000 million of our money jumping up? And we have no accounts. We have no details of who got the money. We have a silence surrounding the parliament and we have a silence surrounding the central bank. And that is what I am battling to dismantle. That's my introduction.
I love it. Start off strong, right? You always indeed. Catch your attention.
Powerful.
Okay, now with that, okay, given the speculation, the mm-hmm. rumors rather, about Mr. Lawrence Dupre mm-hmm. wanting to return to the head mm-hmm. of CLICO.
Yes, yes.
If the government should allow that, how would you feel about that?
Well, I think it's a little more than, with all respect, I think it's a little more than speculation or rumors.
Mm-hmm.
From what I could remember, on the 28th of June, which was a Sunday, Lawrence gave a front page article in the Sunday
yes.
Express
mm-hmm.
when in fact Lawrence was practically interviewed by one of the Express top people, and he more or less declared, from what I could remember reading, and that is a full page story on page 3 of the Express of Sunday 28th of June, he more or less declared that he wants to come back to get his company. I think the opening sentence was a keeper. You know, in life you get these things that even when you're big, you remember something that happened when you were like about 9, I was a keeper. And the opening sentence was something like, Dupre felt he had been, what's the word, boy? He felt he had been cheated or something in the negotiations. He felt he'd been outsmarted. And of course, that was kind of, that just made me smile and chuckle a bit that Sunday morning. Because, I mean, this man is a master negotiator.
Hmm.
And these guys, make no mistake about it, they plan things years and years ahead. That doesn't mean they can't make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But they plan and they think on a scale that is virtually inconceivable to normal people. So the idea of somebody outwitting Lawrence Dupre, it really made me laugh. And I nearly had an accident in my coffee when I saw it that morning. You know, so it's more than speculation. The idea of Dupre taking back over the company is one that I think is completely unacceptable. It's not on. The reason that we're having this conversation is a tragic conversation because people who had been saving for their retirement found mm-hmm. themselves in jeopardy. The government of the day, which was a PNM government, a PNM cabinet, is who put these arrangements in place, eh? Because the partnership didn't come into power until May of 2010. The government of the day entered into an arrangement to pay the debts of CL Financial, which is what the bailout means. That arrangement was unique and special. It's the only kind of arrangement. You can only get that arrangement between special friends.
Mm.
So, for example, it's the wealthiest man in the Caribbean was able to get the largest loan ever in the history of the Caribbean, interest-free. Because the whole loan Dupre got is interest-free. That's how sweet Trinidad. He said, sweet Trinidad, oh gosh, mm. I love it bad. That's what they were talking about. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's how sweet the whole thing is.
Right.
And that was what was agreed in the first half of 2009 with our cabinet at that time. We are now having to battle with the consequences of that. I was against it then. We now have to battle with the consequences of that now. Because whether we like it or not, whether you're in CLICO or you're in Guardian Life or you never took insurance because of your beliefs, the fact of the matter is, as a taxpayer and as a citizen, it has an impact, a material impact on your well-being. Okay? And all of this money has been spent. I have no doubt that it has been spent. The actual amount that has been spent is in question, because we haven't been able to get any detailed accounts.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't been able to get details of who received payments. And all of that is putting us in a situation of tremendous challenge. And it's all down to the fact that particular people, Mr. Dupree was the leader of the group, of course. We know he was the leading man in the whole arrangement. Particular people undertook very, very adventurous things, under things that were on the edge of possibility. Quite likely a number of them were illegal things that got us into this mess. And by us, I'm saying us collectively again, because it's all of us. It even stretches through the Caribbean. Okay? And what's serious about it is that we have laws in the country. I see that Dupree is hired, from that same newspaper article, right. Dupree mm-hmm. has hired Mr. Ramesh Lawrence Miraj as his lead attorney, and he's planning to bring a lawsuit. I think the first thing was breach of contract, and he was alleging that the arrangement that was signed was breached. I think another element he's suing for is called oppression, which of course made me chuckle, because, I mean, you know, the word that we associate with poverty and need. But there we have it. We have a very flexible way with language down here in Trinidad and Tobago. Yes. So Dupree is suing for oppression. And then thirdly, I think he's suing more or less to get back his company. But there's a first hurdle he must overcome, and that's the fit and proper regulations. The fit and proper regulations are set up by the central bank to control the people who can own, sit as directors, sit as officers, right. audit, or act as actuaries for financial companies.
Okay.
And Dupree does not satisfy the tests for an owner or a director of a financial company.
So
I don't know. I don't know what is the game. The central bank, however, have not enforced that system of rules as perhaps they should have. And the reason for that now, which is very interesting, is that the proper enforcement of that system of rules would bring into scrutiny a lot of other players who are political and who are important, and that will actually throw up what we call a hornet's nest of other things. So there is a way, and I'm speaking about lawful methods, there is a way in which Dupree can be lawfully stopped from regaining control of the company.
Okay.
And concerned citizens need to become aware of these things. I've been writing about it, as I said, in the Business Express I write, and also on afroraymond.wordpress.com, which you were kind enough to mention. But we need to become aware of these things, because our rights are involved, because you don't want somebody who has cooked up a series of arrangements that put virtually the entire Caribbean economy in a problem. Because a lot of other countries are reeling much more than we are from the whole thing. We don't want to let somebody like that back into the house to set up another set of financial arrangements. Are they going to fly straight? I don't think so.
Okay, so help me understand.
Sure.
You're saying that how, based on certain criteria, he doesn't qualify.
No, he doesn't.
To even want to sue to regain his company.
Well, he could try to sue, but I think, and probably they would sue on the regulations, but I'm saying that the fit and proper regulations, which are run by the central bank, are designed to control the people, in other words, the quality of the person who can become the owner, a director, an officer, an auditor, or an actuary for a financial institution.
Okay.
And the purpose of it is to establish a set of rules to prevent wrongdoers, people who are financially illiterate, people who are dishonest, and so on,
right.
from getting into that position of trust because of the tremendous impact that their wrongdoing can have.
Okay.
That's the kind of theory behind the whole thing.
Okay, so you're saying that we have certain measures that could protect us?
Yes, they could protect
us. From this happening
and
once again?
They should do so, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Now, with that, I know your TED Talk a couple of years ago, you focused on white-collar crime and corruption.
Yes.
Very, very fascinating. What do you think, beyond using these measures, how can we try to curb the corruption or supposed corruption taking place within Clico and other companies?
Well, all I could say, playing back in my mind, and when you say we is one of those phrases, is only two letters long, but it's so pregnant with possibility.
Yes.
When you say we,
I mean all of us, as in citizens of Trinidad and Tobago.
I know, I'm coming to that.
Right.
I'm grasping your meaning.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
When you say we, it's pregnant with possibility, because what it's saying to me is this. We could put we in a very broad, laconic kind of sense, and end up in a conversation of what the government should do.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So Kamala should have do this.
Right.
And you find Dr. Rowley should have done that, and Patrick Manning should have done the other. Mm-hmm. We end up in that sort of conversation, which is verging on helplessness, learned helplessness, what the government should have done, and so on and so on. And I want to say that, in fact, a partner of mine, when all of this went down, a partner of mine actually made the suggestion that, in fact, it produces a sense of hopelessness. Because you have a situation where, time and again, you see some big person in a position of trust doing stupidness. In a family program, he just talking about that, doing stupidness. Big stupidness, not even small thing. Okay. Not even something small in your private, a big thing. Which breaks a lot of people's trust, money is lost, and so on and so on. That person, sometimes you could barely get them to say they're sorry. Or you might admit that they really did the thing. But the way the thing went down is only they could have been responsible. Mm-hmm. And the way that our society works, it seems that we sort of recycle these people without any attempt to explain what happened.
Right.
Or to get from them any kind of I think, well, I'll try better next time. Because mm-hmm. we're all human beings and we could make a mistake and try better next time. All of us are big now. At one point, we were little.
Right. But as a child, I thought as a child, right?
Exactly. Okay. But the point I'm making and the point my partner put to me, said to me, what we should do in civil society, those of us, because you don't have the power to arrest anybody. I don't have the power to arrest anybody. I mean, I brought my own private lawsuit and had a victory last week and so on. But we don't have that power to arrest anybody. Mm-hmm. The point being that, in fact, people like that, we should banish them to obscurity, as the phrase he used.
Mm-hmm.
We should not put them in a place where they should continue to receive accolades and honors and recognition and consideration, unless what they are doing is giving us an account of what they did, what went wrong.
Right. So without accountability, right? With that being said, who do you think should be held accountable mm-hmm. for the memorandum of understanding signed by the Patrick Manning administration to deal with the CLICO bailout?
Well, the members of the cabinet. I mean, the principal person that I would name, if I had to name a single human being, the principal person would have to be Karen Nunes Tishera.
Okay.
Because Mrs. Nunes Tishera was the Minister of Finance at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that entire matter fell directly into her portfolio.
Yes.
Her junior minister at that time was Mariano Brown. And he and I have had some exchanges on it recently, very interesting, very informative exchanges. But I think we would need to have an explanation from Mrs. Nunes Tishera as to what was the public policy rationale.
Okay.
That could have led our country to make a loan to, in fact, the wealthiest man in the Caribbean, interest-free.
All righty. So we'll take a moment for a break. We're going to take a little break. And remember, you can call us and text us. Okay? So, Tessa, you can give them the number right about now.
Yeah. The number to call is 622-1981. And we have Mr. Raymond in the hot seat with us here.
Thank you.
So stay with us.
Our For Whom the Bell Tolls election coverage continues this evening as we tackle the issue of accountability and transparency with a person who took on the cloud of secrecy surrounding government's bailout of the CLICO conglomerate. In the Cruise Control hot seat this evening at 6:30, Afra Raymond. What has him so concerned about the bailout? The outspoken columnist Afra Raymond is in the hot seat at 6:30 p.m. on the Cruise Control, only on Isaac 98.1 FM.
Okay, so we are in the hot seat on Cruise Control with Mr. Afra Raymond, and he is giving us a wonderful interview right now. Really is wonderful.
Yeah.
We're getting a lot of information, a lot of information. So I hope the listeners are very appreciative of what is happening right now. You spoke about winning a suit.
Yes.
Last week.
Right. What happened is that I initiated a lawsuit. Thank you for that question. I initiated a lawsuit in March of 2013.
Mm-hmm.
As a private citizen, at my own expense,
yes.
against the Minister of Finance. And that time, the Minister of Finance is the current holder of that office, Mr. Larry Hawaii. And the purpose of the lawsuit was to seek, under the Freedom of Information Act, details concerning the bailout.
Okay.
And there were four things I asked for. And I'll just outline what the four things are. I succeeded in three of the things.
Okay.
The first one was, I asked for the audited accounts of CL Financial, which is a group. Holding company.
Right.
And if the audited accounts weren't available, I wanted whatever accounts the ministers of finance were using. Because the ministers of finance always give speeches and they talk and they have figures. Somebody says 19, somebody says 21. Where mm-hmm. do they get those figures from? Second thing I asked for was that there was a briefing in Parliament in September 2011. And that briefing was to attract the votes of the independent senators with respect to two important laws relating to the bailout. That briefing was conducted by the then Minister of Finance, Mr. Winston Dukoran, and the then Governor of the Central Bank, Mr. Ewart Williams. And there were other advisors with them. And I asked for details of that briefing. That's a briefing at the highest level carried out in our parliament. We live in a democracy, in support of a piece of legislation, supposedly in the public interest. That was also denied to me.
Okay.
The third thing I asked for was details of the monies paid out to make up the $26 billion. In other words, the different payments and who got what and so on and so on. And the fourth thing I asked for is that CL Financial is now, by virtue of the CL Financial Shareholders Agreement of the 12th of June 2009, CL Financial is now under state control. The state appoints most of the directors of the board and the state funds the company. Therefore, are those directors and CL Financial and all of their subsidiaries filling out the forms for the Integrity Commission like they should do with all the other state-owned companies?
Okay.
That's the fourth question. Well, the fourth question, I eventually took it out of the Freedom of Information thing against Mr. Hawaii, and I've been conducting my own discussion with the Integrity Commission on that. But the first three things, the High Court awarded them to me.
Okay.
So in fact, the High Court awarded the publication of the accounts, they awarded the publication of the briefing to the parliamentarians, and they awarded the publication of certain particulars around the people who receive the payout.
Just reminding callers, you can call us at 622-1981. Mr. Raymond, you said that you are totally against the bailout.
Absolutely.
Yeah? What would have been some of the recommendations or path that we could have taken on this issue?
Well, to begin with, if we were going ahead with the bailout, I mean, there's all kinds of different gradations, yeah? If we were going ahead with the bailout, the first thing we have to do is to ask ourselves why Mr. Dupree and his cohorts were allowed to keep their shares. So they turned up in the central bank, metaphorically speaking, on their knees. They had no money. The central bank was the lender of last resort. The central bank, the government, the state, assists them financially. And they should have, their shares should have been taken from them. So in fact, because the shares were left with them, we have now been left with a scenario where Dupree can say he's hiring this lawyer and he's hiring that lawyer and he wants to get back his company because he still has shares in his hands. That should not have happened. The other thing I would say that I would have liked to have seen is a greater degree of due diligence, because in fact, just to put another aspect forward for listeners and for you two ladies, is that in fact our country was signing a blank check.
Okay. So we have a caller. Good night. Good afternoon.
Good evening. You're live on the hot seat
with Mr. Afro Raymond. Yes. Do you have a question?
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Hello. Good evening.
Okay. Oh, we have a very bad line.
Yeah.
Call back one more time, please.
Please.
Yeah. Call us again.
We do apologize. You were coming through a bit static. So if you can call back, we'd greatly appreciate it. Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Raymond.
Yeah, the point I was making is that one of the points that is little appreciated is that the bailout itself was a blank check. So all of $5 billion was mentioned in the first stanza. And then we went further down the road and we got to 7.3.
Right.
And right now it's about 25, 26. The fact of the matter, if you look at the Memorandum of Understanding of 30th of January of 1999, the MOU, and the Shareholders Agreement of the 12th of June 2009, neither of those agreements have a figure. So in effect, our Treasury was signing a blank check to pay any of the debts owed by CL Financial. And that's another thing we would have wanted some more due diligence.
Hi, good night.
Good evening.
Clearly?
No.
You're coming through somewhat static.
It's a lot of static right now. Could you, let's hear your question. Let's see if you're hearing it properly.
There are two things that I would like to ask the present member of the panel. Is one, are you privy to tell us the monies that was paid out, who got what, the amount and the companies? That's one. And two, did you know Mr. Dupree before he assumed the head of the CL Financial? I will listen on the radio. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling.
The first answer is no, I didn't. I don't know who got how much money. And in fact, that is exactly what I sued for. But as I was just explaining, so maybe we had a little mix-up in the communication there. As to whether I know Mr. Lawrence Dupree, the simple answer is no. I've never met him. We've never even met socially, shook hands or anything. We've been in the same place sometimes. At Trinidad is like that. You'd be in the same party with somebody who's standing 100 yards away. But Lawrence Dupree and I have never had any communication or any conversation. So the answer is no.
Okay. All right. So remember, you can keep your calls coming in. You can send us some text messages. And we have even more questions for Mr. Raymond. Now, some of the information, apparently it was considered too sensitive for public consumption. From what you received in your suit, do you think it is that sensitive?
Well, I didn't receive it yet. This is an interesting thing.
Okay.
The court awarded the rule in my favor. But in fact, the government asked for a stay of execution and they were granted it, which means that the government has a little bit of time before they have to release the information to me. 28 days. We're on day 8 out of 28, so we have 20 more days before we see what happens.
All right. All right, so let's go to the phone lines. Good evening, you're live on 98.1 FM.
Good evening.
Hi, good evening.
Hi, could you load on your radio, please?
I do apologize. We're having some technical problems with our phone lines.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, hello.
Yeah, I wanted to know, what is the connection with British and Kinko? And is he still supposed to pay British, even though all these laws things going on? I'll listen on it.
Thank you so very much for calling.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what the caller means, but the lady might be referring to the fact that there were five companies that were distressed.
Yes.
And one of them was a company called British American Insurance, mm-hmm. Trinidad Limited, which has been abbreviated in a lot of the correspondence as BAT. So perhaps that is what you're saying. But yes, BAT was part of the CL Financial Group that became very distressed, and a certain amount of money had to be paid out. BAT has had a lot less profile in Trinidad and Tobago for two reasons. Although the actual headquarters is in Barataria, BAT actually had most of its business throughout the rest of the Caribbean. They had very little business in Trinidad and Tobago.
Okay.
So BAT's profile in the consciousness of Trinidadians and Tobagonians, and rightfully so, wasn't very high.
Right.
Clico had a very high profile because they were a huge insurance company. You know?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But
all right.
BAT was really part of the problem, but it's not very big in people's mind.
Okay, so what would you say is the most important thing the nation should learn from the handling of the Clico crash?
That's something, an interesting thing. Well, yeah. I think the most important thing, really, is the whole question that there's a relationship between risk and reward. Because what really made this thing spin out of control is that Clico developed a product. And we don't have enough time in this program to get into what the product was and how it all worked. But they developed a particular product that offered exceedingly high rates of return and for what appeared to be very little risk. And quite simply, that's just like an impossible mix. And a lot of people put their money in. And the rate of interest that was being offered was two times more than what the bank was offering. And the way that interest rates of return and reward are related, something that is two times more interest than something else, the risk is plenty more than two times.
Okay.
It's not a straightforward relationship, one for one and two for two. It's not like that. And we need to become more aware of that, you know?
Okay.
All right, thank you so much, Mr. Raymond. We really appreciate it. But before you leave, I just have one quick question to ask you. White-collar crime, it's not seen as gruesome as murder or kidnapping or what have you. Mm-hmm. What do you think I want to figure out the nicest way to say this. What can we possibly do to try and heighten the awareness and the disgust, I should say, for the white collar crime in Trinidad and Tobago? Is there anything we could do to heighten the awareness?
Well, I think the disgust is fairly high. I think in terms of heightening the awareness, it's a question of continuing the work of civil society groups to promote a greater understanding about the thing. The public is very much aware of it. We need to do more work in terms of promoting an understanding of what has actually happened and what are the ways that we can tackle it, not only legally, but through banishing people.
to obscurity,
I said earlier on.
Okay, now the radio station can't necessarily back that up.
Of course not.
Yes, because we're a Christian station,
not
so not obscurity.
Not banishment.
But yes, I understand exactly what you're saying.
I want to make a final point, if I may.
No problem.
Thank you. The final point I wish to make relates to the whole question about the appeal.
Okay.
Because I said earlier on in one of my stanzas that, in fact, the government has about 20 more days to decide whether to give the information or not, as the court has ordered. If the government decides not to give the information, the logical thing they would do is appeal. So they would then be spending more taxpayers' money to go into another stage of litigation to conceal the information about how they're spending a vast amount of taxpayers' money. So it'll be wrong on a number of levels. And therefore, I call in this week's newspaper column, which was published yesterday, and I am calling for the Ministry of Finance to operate and to make this decision and to place the public interest first, publish the information. And I'm also using the opportunity on the air to put out a provocative question to Dr. Rowley.
Oh, my.
Dr. Rowley's leader of the opposition. We are within 6 weeks of national elections. Dr. Rowley has made the centerpiece of his campaign the whole question of accountability, good governance and transparency, morality in public affairs and so on. Those are principles no right-thinking person could object to those principles.
Okay.
Question. If Dr. Rowley succeeds on his team, we succeed in election on September the 7th, I don't know which way it'll go, it's still in the future, but if they succeed and Dr. Rowley becomes the Prime Minister of Trinidad and Tobago shortly thereafter, but we are faced with a situation where this appeal has been lodged by the current government.
Mm-hmm.
Would the PNM take the necessary action swiftly, say it again, swiftly, to write to the appeal court and withdraw the appeal and accelerate the publication of the information which is in the public interest? That is the question.
Okay.
All those right. are the two questions I place out there. So.
Okay, so that question has been posed.
Thank you.
And we want to thank you for the time.
Thank you,
spent
you very
with
much.
Us this afternoon. I will shake your hand, Mr. Raymond. It is an honor.
Thank you.
We had Afro Raymond on the in the hot seat on cruise control.
It was cool.
Yeah, it was a cool seat.
Thanks.
Okay, all right. We'll be able to
tough
next time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good
thank
night.
Thank you. Good evening.